The Machinists Union strikes Boeing. Tragedy strikes again in Reno. And the FAA is talking about its audit of airline AD compliance. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, September 8th, 2008. Things are quiet at Boeing's plants this morning, except for whatever sound $100 million in revenue makes as it flies out of the till each day. Nobody seems surprised to learn that the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers won its staring contest with Boeing. Late Friday afternoon, the company conceded that mediated talks had failed. The strike was delayed 48 hours for one more try, but began at 12:01 a.m. Saturday morning. During the work stoppage, Boeing says it will support customers, continue delivering airplanes completed prior to the strike, and continue to provide spare parts. The hiatus in assembly, however, will cost the company an estimated $100 million a day. The IAM sent a defiant statement to its members, quote, "This company disrespected the process, bargained illegally, and most of all disrespected the finest aerospace workers anywhere on the planet by failing to meet your expectations. Armed with your strong strike vote, the IAM negotiating committee continues to try and convince the company to meet our members' demands," unquote. A tragic accident has claimed the life of a pilot during preparations for the Reno air races. 32-year-old Formula One air racer Erica Simpson of Phillipsburg, New Jersey, died when the Cassatt 3M she was flying suffered a structural failure during an evaluation flight about 9 a.m. Saturday. FAA spokesman Ian Greger says the aircraft experienced a wing separation during a roll. He adds organizers were observing her as part of the certification process prior to the start of racing. Erica Simpson was a 7,000-hour commercial pilot, former Reno competitor, and according to her website, was most recently employed as a captain at Citation Shares, a fractional ownership management company. ANN extends our sympathies to Erica's family and friends. The results are in following an FAA audit announced in April of U.S. airline compliance with airworthiness directives. Acting Administrator Robert Sturgill said Friday, FAA inspectors found an overall compliance rate of 98% in more than 5,600 audits of airworthiness directives at U.S. air carriers. In the remaining 2% of the audits, the carriers resolved the issues of noncompliance before the airplanes flew again. Says Sturgill, quote, "This audit gives us confidence that, overall, the system is safe and in almost every instance the airlines are complying with our safety directives," unquote. Cases in which the FAA charged noncompliance fell into five categories: inability to show compliance with an AD, compliance but inadequate records, cases where the carrier did the work but had to apply for an alternate means of compliance approval, situations where the work was not done but the airplane also was not flying, and minor discrepancies that did not involve ADs. Acknowledging that a 2% failure rate is still not what the FAA expects, Sturgill added, quote, "We're focusing on the language of our directives to make sure they're clear, concise, and unambiguous, and we're working with industry to approve work in progress before the compliance date," unquote. The U.S. Coast Guard yesterday suspended active search efforts for one crew member still missing in the fatal crash of an HH-65 Dolphin helicopter Thursday night off Honolulu, Hawaii. 42-year-old Commander Thomas Nelson of Staten Island, New York, has been missing since the chopper went down during training south of the island. U.S. Coast Guard Rear Admiral Manson Brown told the Honolulu Advertiser, quote, "Coast Guard crews, with the generous assistance of our local, state, and federal agency partners, have diligently searched around the clock since Thursday for our missing aviator, but I've decided to end our active search for Commander Nelson," unquote. On Friday, Brown had confirmed recovery of the bodies of the other three crew members. The helicopter was said to have hit the water during what was described as a routine mock search and rescue exercise. Brown acknowledged the emotions affecting the search crews. Quote, "This is a very difficult case because rescuers are being rescued," unquote. Local fire and police departments and the U.S. Navy had been assisting in the search. Up next on ANN, NASA officially delays the next two shuttle missions. The FAA says replacements for outdated computers in Atlanta are in the works. And a warrant is issued for the Firebug flight attendant. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC 700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply canal tips, composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for September 8, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. On Friday, NASA made an expected announcement that target launch dates for the two remaining space shuttle missions in 2008 have been adjusted following delays related to tropical storms. Atlantis's mission to the Hubble Space Telescope is now targeted for October 10th, while Endeavour's supply mission to the International Space Station has moved to November 12th. Shuttle managers made the decision after Atlantis was rolled to the launch pad on Thursday, and the effects of Tropical Storm Hanna were safely beyond NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. That allowed managers to more accurately assess the impacts of recent tropical systems on the launch schedule. The formal launch dates for space shuttle flights are determined during the flight readiness review, which is conducted about 2 weeks before launch. The Atlantis STS-125 review is scheduled for September 22nd and 23rd. The review for Endeavour's STS-126 mission is scheduled for October 30th. Due to the possible need for a mission rescue anytime a shuttle visits the Hubble, Atlantis won't go until Endeavour is ready and standing by. The FAA now says a computer network failure last week that delayed hundreds of flights in the eastern U.S. by up to 90 minutes originated with equipment due to be replaced within a few months. The National Airspace Data Interchange Network, or NADIN, supports the critical exchange of flight plan data, weather information, notices to airmen, and other safety-related messages. It's also an important link between the FAA and countries belonging to the International Civil Aviation Organization. Other users include the airlines, the National Weather Service, the Departments of Defense, and Homeland Security. The network was commissioned in 1988 and now processes more than 1.5 million messages a day. The FAA says new high-speed servers are replacing the collection switches at the FAA's two primary NADIN facilities in Atlanta and Salt Lake City, as well as the antiquated concentrators in each en route center. The FAA promises that once the upgrades are complete, if there's another failure like last week's, the offload of that traffic to the backup facility will not cause a bottleneck. The former Compass Airlines flight attendant charged with starting a fire in an aircraft lavatory in May to show his displeasure for having to work a run out of Minneapolis to Regina, Saskatchewan, failed to show up for his mandatory court appearance in Fargo, North Dakota on Friday. The Associated Press reports U.S. District Judge Rodney Webb issued an arrest warrant for Ader Rojas, who was reportedly last seen at a halfway house about 3:30 a.m. Friday morning. As ANN reported back in June, the 19-year-old confessed he deliberately started a fire in the rear lavatory of an Embraer 175 during the May 7th flight because he was upset that the airline made him work that route. He stuffed an extra packet of paper towels in the lav's dispenser just before the flight left Minneapolis and later reached into the lav and lit the towels on fire before starting beverage service. Flight 2040 diverted to Fargo, where it made an uneventful emergency landing. None of the 72 passengers and four crew were injured, but they were interrogated by FBI agents and police. A federal prosecutor later said Rojas was also crewing a flight during which a bathroom caught fire about 5 weeks earlier. The prosecutor said in both cases, Rojas helped put out the blaze. Despite his confession, Rojas pleaded not guilty in June to the charges. He was originally remanded to his father's custody, but was later ordered to the halfway house for unspecified reasons. On Friday, defense attorney Stephen Light told Judge Webb his client has been incredibly unreceptive and won't speak to him. Boeing faces the closure of its plant in Long Beach, California, when production of the C-17 Globemaster III transport aircraft ends in 2010. The company recently proposed an updated version called the C-17B, better suited for short-haul missions, in the hopes of extending production. The bad news, according to the Los Angeles Times, came from General Arthur J. Licht, a four-star general in charge of procuring new cargo planes for the U.S. Air Force. Licht recently told a group of military reporters he sees little need for a stronger, more powerful variant of the C-17 over the next 10 to 20 years, adding that role is already served by the smaller Lockheed Martin C-130. The good news is Boeing thinks the U.S. Army might be interested in the plane, as it looks for aircraft able to haul a new line of armored vehicles now under development. The C-17 is already a strong short-field aircraft for its size. Boeing says the upgraded C-17B tactical variant, with stronger landing gear and more powerful engines, would be able to operate from even smaller, unimproved airstrips and carry heavier payloads while doing it. Boeing hopes an order from the Army would help convince the Air Force to reconsider the plane, keeping the production line moving. That may be a hard sell. The Pentagon has repeatedly said there's no need for additional C-17s in any configuration, and the Air Force isn't in the greatest position right now to argue its procurement savvy, given the KCX debacle. Still ahead, an airplane thief gets 4 years in prison. Rocket Racing prepares for Reno. And Continental Airlines joins the First Bag Fee Club. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, September 8, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. A man who tried to impress his girlfriend a year ago by taking her for a joyride in a stolen twin-engine plane has been sentenced to 4 years in prison. Local police say 39-year-old Michael Santos was drunk when he got the plane started and headed off down a taxiway at LaPorte Municipal Airport in Indiana with his girlfriend in the cockpit beside him. A half mile later, he couldn't negotiate a turn to the runway and ran the plane off into a soybean field where its nose wheel sank in soft dirt. The arrest was made a few weeks later when a tipster told police he'd heard Santos bragging about the exploit. The Associated Press reports he confessed, but told the court his first child is due this year. Quote, "I need to start providing for my family now. I beg for leniency on this," unquote. Defense attorney Don Pagos asked the court to sentence Santos to a work release program. But LaPorte Circuit Judge Tom Alavizos agreed with County Deputy Prosecutor Jennifer Evans that a stiffer penalty was called for. He imposed a 4-year prison sentence Friday. After reviewing the defendant's record, Santos has more than a dozen prior convictions, some for drunken driving, and has lost his driver's license for life. Santos confessed to charges of theft and criminal mischief. Police add that Santos drove to the airport, despite that lifetime revocation of his driver's license. The Rocket Racing League announced on Thursday the successful results of the first 7 test flights of the Bridenstine DKNY Rocket Racer, conducted at the Oklahoma Spaceport in Burns Flat. The vehicle, which flew the public debut at Oshkosh using an X-Core liquid oxygen kerosene engine, has since been refitted with a liquid oxygen alcohol power plant from Armadillo Aerospace. An aggressive flight test campaign has been designed to validate static and dynamic airframe and engine stability throughout the craft's envelope. Granger Whitelaw, Rocket Racing League co-founder and CEO, said, quote, "The successful conclusion of this flight test campaign marks 2 important milestones for the league, allowing us to proceed on our planned schedule of exhibition race events throughout the remainder of 2008 and 2009, and also validating our rapid prototyping capability." Bill Khoury, executive director of the Oklahoma Space Industry Development Authority, said he was thrilled to host those tests. Quote, "The Oklahoma Spaceport provided the league with a qualified facility, including a runway of almost 3 miles in length, hangar facilities, safety officials, air traffic control, and other support staff and housing. It was a major milestone in our evolution," unquote. A first public demonstration race for the Rocket Racers is tentatively scheduled this week for the Reno Air Races. Customers have complained loudly about all the new fees for checked bags being charged by most major U.S. airlines. But apparently, the airlines bet that we'd keep on flying, and you know what? It looks like they're winning the bet. Continental Airlines was one of the last holdouts, but effective last Friday, flyers buying discounted economy class tickets purchased for travel after October 7th are being charged an extra $15 for the first checked bag. The airline also announced it will trim bonus mileage earned by members of its awards program starting November 15th. Rick Shawnee of FareCompare.com told the Cleveland Plain Dealer the decision is not surprising given the competition among airlines and how closely they match each other on fares and fees. In fact, he says Continental is smart for letting other airlines test the idea and take the initial heat from consumers. Shawnee says Delta Airlines is now the only large U.S. airline with no fee on the first checked bag. Delta, however, charges $50 for the second checked bag. That's the highest second bag fee in the industry. Continental will not charge the new fee on tickets sold to first class or business customers, One Pass Elite and SkyTeam Elite members, military personnel or their families traveling on official orders, or travelers paying the full undiscounted coach fare. International flights, and those from the U.S. to Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, or Canada, will also be exempt. The news that passengers haven't reduced their flying over the fees means charges for checked bags are probably here to stay. Continental CEO Larry Kellner told investors in a recent conference call that passengers are bringing fewer checked bags with them, which means the planes are flying lighter and burning less fuel. If the new policies mean passengers are trying to cram more stuff in their carry-ons, Shawnee notes the airlines say that's not a big deal. But he adds, quote, "I think if you asked flight attendants and passengers, you might get a different opinion," unquote. And finally, the 90th anniversary of the launch of airmail service in the U.S. is this month, and it will receive a fitting celebration. Boeing and Jeppesen will sponsor a five-day cross-country reenactment from New York to San Francisco using vintage planes carrying real U.S. mail. The planes include a historic 1928 Boeing Model 40, a 1927 Boeing Stearman C-3B, and a 1930 Boeing Stearman 4E. The planes will depart New York's Republic Field at 9:30 a.m. this Wednesday, make numerous stops on their cross-country trek, and land at either San Francisco International or Crissy Field 1 week from today. You know, it's hard now to imagine the risks involved in delivering airmail in open cockpits through all kinds of weather with no modern nav aids or even good charts. As many as 30% of airmail pilots were killed in weather-related accidents during some winters, sacrificing their lives to anchor the beginnings of today's global commerce. One of those pilots was Captain L. Ray B. Jeppesen, whose hand-drawn charts showing landmarks and obstacles along his routes eventually evolved into the company that now bears his name. Completing the circle of life, Jeppesen is now a subsidiary of Boeing. You're encouraged to come out and meet the pilots and see the planes as they spend 5 days heading west. You'll find a complete list of planned stops across the U.S. in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. To show you just how far things have come in 90 years, from the time you enter the URL in your browser and hit enter on the West Coast, it should take just over a tenth of a second for your request to be received at our servers on the East Coast. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. Bob will share some lessons from the story of a family of relatively inexperienced pilots who recently flew from New York State to Alaska. And if you haven't gotten around to it, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.